This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Jewel of Darkness by Quinn Loftus, narrated by Terry Schnaubelt. Prologue. I can still feel her, though I can't see her. I can still hear her voice, though she is far from me. I can still feel her skin beneath my lips, though her flesh is nowhere near me. The bond is still firmly intact, and that is the only thing keeping me from burning the world to the ground and allowing myself to be engulfed in the flames. Dalton Black. Under different circumstances, Jewel might have liked waking up to the sight of a dozen half-naked men. As it was, however, the sight was more than a little disturbing, since they were the men that Vulcan intended to use for his twisted witch-breeding program, the program that Jewel would be a broodmare for. She was beginning to think that her bright idea of letting Vulcan capture her in order to save the other healers was about as bright as the captain of the cheerleading squad. How bright is that, you ask? Jill Sawyer, said Captain, was so bright that she thought a civil war was one in which the two opposing parties fought in a manner that didn't involve killing or violence of any kind, because it was, you know, civil, insert annoying preppy voice. When Jewel decided to let Vulcan capture her, she hadn't considered the thought that he might try passing her around to different men in order to build a witch army through the offspring of those couplings. Mostly, she just thought she would be fending off his advances and learning about magic. She mentally knocked some points off her IQ for stupidity. She also hadn't considered just how hard it would be to walk away from Dalton Black. She definitely deserved to be knocked out of the genius category for that choice. Seriously, she thought, who walks away from a man like that? A man who had said things to her that most women dreamed of hearing. Genius, apparently, she said, answering her own question. Jewel squeezed her eyes closed as the thoughts of Dalton flooded her mind. Their time together had been so short. Most of it had been spent with her unconscious and him talking to her and sitting by her side. She had only spent a few precious minutes with him while not in a coma, and yet those were the most amazing moments of her 18 years. But even more vivid than the good times with him was the memory of the look on his face when Vulcan had taken her. The usually stoic, always-in-control Dalton had showed a myriad of emotions across his masculine face. They ranged from anger to fear, desperation, love, need, and still others that Jewel wasn't sure she could even interpret. She felt the deep seed of guilt plant itself in her gut. She'd left him after he'd claimed her and she him. She imagined that this was supposed to be done under much different circumstances and include emotions that didn't involve all the ones that had made an appearance on Dalton's face. She had forever tainted something that she knew had to be sacred to his race. Essentially, she'd accepted his claim, his affection, and thrown it back in his face. Jewel hadn't trusted him to protect her, provide for her, or even given him the chance to prove himself. From what she understood of alpha males, that amounted to pretty much repeated kicks to his man parts. If she made it through this in one piece, how would she face him again? How would she even expect him to want her? Perhaps it would be easier to just accept her fate rather than return to a man she'd so thoroughly neutered. For so long, she'd dreamed of something as amazing as the love stories in the books she read, and it had finally been within her grasp. She'd been accepted, even liked, for who she was. Jewel had seen adoration, desire, respect, and love in the eyes of another, and those emotions were aimed at her. "You deserve whatever that power-hungry psycho plans to put you through," she muttered to herself under her breath, as she sat up and directed her attention to the door and away from the men. She squared her shoulders and raised her chin, ready to face her captor. The door opened, and Vulcan stepped in.
"Honey, we're all home,"
he motioned to the males. Jewel nearly rolled her eyes.
"Great, Psycho is also a comedian."
The only hope she had in that moment came in the form of her clumsiness. Perhaps she would trip over her own feet, fall, crack her skull, and die. She could only imagine what the epitaph on the tombstone would be. "Here lies Jewel Stone, the dumbest genius on Earth." Chapter 1.
I'm so very sick of stupid gypsy healers.
For goodness sakes, if the great Luna felt the need to bring back these women, couldn't she have at least picked a few chicks with half an ounce of survival instincts, and even just a pinch of non-dumbassness? Perry. So that was enlightening and also a bit annoying. Perry finally spoke up after their dismal conversation with Jewel's mother. Dalton knew the woman was simply telling them what she knew, but he agreed with Perry. It was annoying. If he was going to be honest, it was more than annoying. It pissed him off to a level that was quickly surpassing the anger he'd felt at seeing Vulcan with his hands on his mate and then disappearing with her. A growl rose in his throat, and his hands began to shake as the memory filled his mind. Beta. Dylan touched him on his shoulder, and the Alpha's voice kept him from losing it, barely. He nodded his head once, letting his Alpha know that he wasn't going to let the wolf take over, though the beast was fighting him at every opportunity. His eyes refocused, and he saw that they stood out on the cracked sidewalk once again, surrounded by dilapidated old houses. It still frustrated him that this was where his little dove had grown up. He could have given her more, made her safer, and ensured that she had not been alone. "What's the plan, O fearless leader?" Perry asked as she turned to face Dalton. He knew that they were looking to him to find her because of their bond, but he'd been trying to reach her since the last time, and still there was nothing. Dalton attempted again to reach through their bond, but there was nothing to grasp. She just wasn't there. No matter how many times he mentally reached for her, he felt nothing. His wolf was snarling and throwing himself at Dalton's mind, attempting to take control. Dalton took deep breaths and focused on the image of Jewel's face in his mind. He couldn't let the wolf loose. Blood would drench his fur because the wolf would destroy anyone near them just to relieve the anger inside. If he couldn't tear into Vulcan, it would take substitutions until his foe was before him. No, he could not let his wolf out.
"Do you have any idea where he could be?" Dalton asked her.
There was no emotion in his voice, only cool calculation. He hated to admit that he couldn't find her, but swallowing his pride was a small thing if it meant he might find Jewel.
"Would the scum be in another realm, or would he stay here?"
"You can't feel her, can you?"
Perry asked. Her eyes narrowed when he shook his head. Perry's lips thinned, and had she been a wolf herself, she would have been snarling.
"I am so sick of twisted dickheads messing with my wolves and their mate bonds. You would think that one of them would come up with an original idea."
"Berzada, do you know where he is?"
Lucian asked Dalton's question again in his quiet, patient way. That was why they worked, Dalton thought. Perry was the poison and Lucian was the antidote. They were two sides to the same coin. They balanced each other out, and one without the other would be devastating to them both. Dalton badly needed that balance himself. He needed Jewel. He was a ticking time bomb, and she was the only one who could find the correct wire to deactivate him. Dalton hadn't realized that until she came into his life. He thought that he knew what true fear was, but all he'd been through was nothing compared to the possibility of losing his true mate. He was brought back from his thoughts when he heard Perry answer.
"I think he was in another realm while he waited like the coward he is. But now that he's got Jewel and he's ready to put his plan into action, he's probably in the human realm. We just have to track him down."
Dalton clenched his jaw. It was the only emotion he let seep through his mask.
"How do we do that?"
Perry shot him a look that clearly told him she thought he was an idiot. He didn't care.
"We go find some other evil scum that might know where he is. Given the right motivation, they'll hand over their own mothers. We just need to put the fear of you three in them."
"What about you?"
Dylan asked her. The Hyphae shrugged.
"They already fear me. You furballs are icing on my already awesome cake."
She held out her arms for them to once again grab a hold so that she could flash them to their destination.
"Hope you three don't get sick at the sight of blood. It will only encourage them to make you as uncomfortable as possible."
Dylan spit out several curses.
"You're kidding. Not the damned vampires, Perry."
"It would be wise of you not to point out to them that they are indeed damned," she added.
"I didn't know any still existed,"
Lucian told her as he took her hand in his. They don't play nice in the sandbox. They tend to eat their playmates, so they've pretty much been driven into hiding. It's been centuries since there has been any sight of them by human. And now you want to go disturb their nest? Doan growled. Perry turned to Dalton. Do you have a problem with visiting the bloodsuckers?
Will it help us find my mate?
He asked in return.
It's a possibility. Then shut up and go.
Okay, just for the record, we suck at this, Heather announced, not for the first time.
Anna had to agree, but she didn't think that would be appreciated by the other annoyed members of their group. She wondered if the other girls were struggling as much as she was, with the growing ache and discomfort inside, and if that struggle was what was causing their inability to come up with any ideas on how to outsmart Vulcan. They'd talked about it briefly, but like Anna, Stella and Heather seemed reluctant to give much acknowledgement to the feelings because to name it made it real, and real meant they each had a mate, a werewolf mate.
How many times do we have to record that? Krina practically growled.
And that just proved to Anna that she was correct in choosing to hold her tongue.
Until we stop sucking,
Heather rubbed her face and rolled her shoulders back. The stress of their assignment was wearing on them, and they'd only been working on it for 24 hours. But as Anna watched Stella press a hand to her chest, and then Heather do the same thing, she had a feeling it was more than the assignment causing their distress. Perry had tasked them with coming up with a war plan that somehow influenced Vulcan to destroy himself. That didn't seem impossible at all, Anna mentally snorted.
It might help if she would come back and give us a little more to go on, Stella pointed out.
Soren chuckled.
No, I think you'd still suck at it.
Anna decided holding her tongue was overrated.
Not to be rude or anything, but by all means be rude, Heather interrupted. It will help Stella and me not look like such jerks.
Stella tossed a small rock at Heather, hitting her in the shin.
Hey! Heather snapped. No throwing crap at the blind chick. Or at least give me a warning like, hey, blind chick, I'm about to throw something at you. And kick a skunk. Could someone please make this tightening in my chest go away? I keep thinking it has to be heartburn. Please, someone tell me it's heartburn.
If it's heartburn, then it's contagious heartburn, Stella spoke up. She turned to Anna. What about you? Do you have heartburn? She made quotations in the air as she said it. As well? And as Heather said, by all means, be rude. The native New Yorker shot her a wink as she continued to rub her chest. Anna cleared her throat. The heartburn... She paused. She didn't know if hers even qualified as heartburn. What she felt had slowly begun to turn into a whole body burn. But she wasn't ready to admit just how bad it had gotten, not yet at least. The heartburn is definitely contagious. She left it at that and then continued.
Would you two shut up so Anna can speak? Do not make me shut your mouths for you,
Elle growled. Can you do that?
Can she do that?
Stella and Heather asked at the same time. Krina smacked her forehead.
I thought my other packmates were bad, but I think you two would give even them a run for their money.
Anna cleared her throat.
So what I was saying was, why is this so difficult when we have you three?
She motioned to Elle, Adam, and Soren. Aren't you guys, like, really old or something? Haven't you been through a few battles?
Older than dirt, Heather added. They are older than dirt.
Soren leaned forward with his arms resting on his knees. He, like everyone else, was planted on a log so that he didn't have to sit on the ground.
We have been through more battles than any of us care to remember, but regardless of the number, each one is different, and this one more different than them all. Perry wants us to wage a war on a mental battlefield. She wants us to beat Vulcan at his own game. That is nothing like formulating a battle plan over physical terrain. On a real field of battle, we at least know the lay of the land. We can then strategize as to best place our forces. And, of course, we would also know what our weapons are. But the battlefield of the mind can change in the blink of an eye.
Where is our genius when we need her? Stella whined. Jewel would have some crazy facts about physical combat versus mental combat, and all sorts of other mumbo-jumbo that probably wouldn't really help us.
Wait, Anna said, holding up her hands. Maybe all we need to do is do what Jewel would do.
And that would be to spout off information that only the World Wide Web should know, Heather quipped. Sort of, Anna pointed at her, not paying attention to the fact that Heather couldn't see her. We need to find the information that Jewel would already know. Obviously, none of us here are a genius, so we haven't absorbed everything we've read.
Or anything, for that matter, Stella interjected.
Okay, I get what you're saying, Elle told her as she stood up and began pacing. Now we just have to figure out how to get that information without breaking Perry's rules. It's not like these pixies are going to have a library with the stuff we need. Heather chuckled. If they did, it would be a little tiny one with little tiny books, so not helpful. She paused and then added, Y'all are looking at me like I'm on crack, aren't you?
Is dog crap toxic? Krina asked. Because I think you've sniffed it one too many times.
Do you really want me to enter that door you just opened? Heather laughed. You aren't really the one who should be talking about dog crap.
I totally ran headfirst into that one, Krina muttered.
Adam wrapped an arm around his mate and pulled her close. It was a valiant effort, babe.
Anna watched the exchange between Krina and Adam and felt the pain increase another notch. They were so natural together, even their movements were in sync. If Adam shifted, Krina moved with him so that she stayed close. If Krina changed position, Adam moved so that it was where he could quickly get in front of her to protect her if danger suddenly arose.
What would it be like to be that in tune with someone?
She wondered, and when Adam brushed his fingers down Krina's side and the she-wolf shuddered, Anna wondered what it would be like to be touched in such a way that it caused her to quake in her own skin. Could she allow herself to be that close to someone? For most of her life, she'd kept everyone at arm's length. She had a gypsy mother who, once Anna was old enough to make her own food, popped in and out as her spirit led her. And when she wasn't around, Anna had to step up and take care of the store and their little apartment. She had friends at school, but she never let them too close. Anna kept a low profile, not ever wanting to draw attention to herself for fear that someone would realize just how much her mother left her alone. Her mother wasn't a bad mom, she was just a product of her own raising. Anna's mother had grown up in a gypsy caravan. They traveled all over. It was all she knew. But Anna knew that the state would not see it that way. They would see it as neglect and possibly take her away from her mom. If she had a true mate, would she be able to tell him about her childhood? About the lonely nights doing homework alone and about eating TV dinners? Would he think her pathetic for not insisting her mother stay and actually be a mom? Anna glanced back at Adam and Krina, and then over to Al and Soren. In theory, she wanted what they had. In reality, it scared the crap out of her to think of being so laid bare before someone else. Though Anna had wanted her mother to be around more, she hadn't really needed her. Not the way a normal child needs a parent. Anna had grown self-sufficient very quickly. After all, who else was going to make her dinner? What she had needed from her mom was the love and affection she saw her classmates receive when she'd been younger. Kids being dropped off at school, their mother or father hugging them and bidding them a good day. Those were the simple things Anna had needed. Did she even need them anymore? She wondered now if she might have gone so long without affection that she wouldn't even welcome it if she received it. She suddenly felt like she needed some space. The air around her was growing thick, and it was becoming difficult to breathe. Anna wasn't sure if it was watching the mated pair and beginning to feel like she was drowning in her own need, doubts, and fears, or if it was the stress of all the changes that had happened to her over the past couple of months. Whatever it was, she just knew she needed to walk. To get rid of some of the nervous energy. She stood and brushed off her clothes. Anna glanced at the others as she started to step away.
I'm just, she pointed behind her, going for a walk. Want some company? Heather asked.
Anna didn't want to be rude, but she wanted to be alone more than she didn't want to be rude.
I'd rather go by myself. Just need to think.
Just don't let any of those pixie men molest you. It wouldn't be hard with all those easy-access skirts you wear, Stella tossed out. There was no hint of joking in her words.
Says the stripper, Heather smirked.
Good advice, Anna told her with a smile.
Thanks.
Stella shrugged.
I don't know many things, but I know men. Doesn't matter what size they are or where their junk is.
Most of them talk with their hands and think with their... Okay, thank you, Stella, for that very enlightening discussion.
Elle interrupted her. Anna knew that most people who heard Stella talk like that would think she was just being sarcastic. Those who knew her knew that she was speaking from way too much experience for a 19-year-old.
Go on, Anna, Elle told her. Ainsel won't let anything happen to you. He's too afraid of Perry turning him into wolf kibble.
Anna hurried off before anyone else could give her helpful advice or snarky comments. She didn't know where she was going. It wasn't like she knew her way around the pixie realm, so she just walked. There was no path through the forest, but she didn't have a problem finding places to put her feet. The foliage wasn't too thick, and the ground was firm beneath her feet. One step after another took her farther away from the clearing where the others sat discussing war, strategies, and the like, but that wasn't what was on Anna's mind. Stella watched as Anna disappeared into the forest. She had a feeling she knew why Anna needed to take a walk, but she hadn't wanted to call her out on it. They'd already addressed the elephant in the room, that is, the discomfort that each of them was feeling, apparently, due to the fact that they had a true mate. Stella herself wouldn't mind a good brisk run, but she knew that she would just attempt to outrun the inevitable. And from what she had seen with Sally and Costin, there was no outrunning it. There was a man, a werewolf out there, that had been created to be her counterpart, her mate. She didn't know how she felt about it. With her past, being in a relationship was something that she knew would take patience on the part of both parties. Would a dominant werewolf be able to be patient with her? To go as slowly as she knew he would have to go? She shook her head, pushing the anxiety-causing thoughts away. There was nothing she could do about it in that moment, and so there was no sense in stressing over it, not when there were already enough things to stress over. So she pushed the pain and discomfort aside and shoved it into a compartment, just like she had with all of her other pain, and locked it up tight. Heather's head pounded, the rhythm of her headache in perfect sync with the heart in her tight chest. What had started as an annoying discomfort was quickly becoming a pain that couldn't be ignored. It was as if the more she tried to push it away, the stronger the building anguish grew. She knew the other girls were feeling something similar, but she didn't know if they were having the problems with their mind that she was. Not only did she have a horrific headache, but she was also having bright flashes reverberate inside her head. At least that was the only way she knew how to describe it, because it was the complete opposite of the life of darkness she'd always known. Heather wasn't ready to explore what it meant. She had heard Perry and Sally say that they could see what was in their mate's mind, but Heather wasn't yet ready to hope for something like that. To actually see anything, even something through the eyes of another, was a bit more than she could deal with right now. She didn't dare dream of the possibility that she would be able to use his eyes, because if that wasn't the case, she didn't want to feel as though the world had been handed to her and then ripped from her grasp. So she'd endure the pain, like Stella and Anna, quietly, for as long as she could, and hope that her head didn't explode. She would hate for her brains to get all over Stella. Heather chuckled at the thought. "What's funny?" Stella asked her.
"Would you be ticked off if my head exploded and I got my brains all over you?" Heather asked.
A lot of girls would have given a girly, "ew," but not Stella.
"If I wanted to wear brains, I would make sure to add them to my wardrobe. Since there aren't any brains currently sitting in my closet, then I'm going to say that I would be slightly perturbed."
Stella paused and then asked,
"Why are you asking me about your head exploding and brains splattering all over me?"
Heather shrugged.
"It's one of those things we should know about each other. I need to know how you will handle gross situations. I can't claim you as a friend if you squeal like a girl."
Stella laughed. "I don't think I have ever squealed in my life."
"Perfect," Heather smiled. "You don't want to be a squealer. One of the wolves might mistake you for a pig and pounce on you."
The others laughed, but Elle added,
"Oh, he'll pounce on you, but it won't be because he mistakes you for a pig."
Heather heard a low growl from Soren.
"We're wolves, not cats. We don't pounce."
This made the group laugh even louder, and for a brief moment, the pain that radiated in her mind eased. Heather took the tiny reprieve for what it was, but prepared herself for the pain to return. She tried hard not to acknowledge the little voice in the back of her mind that whispered, "Maybe with the pain, the light will come also." Her mind was consumed with something she didn't understand. Her hands shook, so she crossed her arms in front of her chest. Sweat broke out on her forehead and trailed down her back, though it wasn't hot enough to cause sweating. Anna's heart rate continued to increase, and the pounding was nearly painful. Those things were not the most disturbing, however. The most disturbing was the fact that her own feelings weren't the only ones she was feeling. She was distinctly aware of the feelings of another rolling through her mind. Anna had no idea how long she'd been walking or how far she had gone. She just kept placing one foot in front of the other until she suddenly collapsed. Her knees hit the ground, and pain shot up her legs as she fell forward, catching herself with her hands before she could completely faceplant. She was panting as though she'd been running, and the sweating had increased to the point that she knew she must look like she'd taken a jump in a lake. After taking several deep breaths, Anna pushed her hands off and attempted to stand. But when she fell back to the earth, she grunted in pain, a pain unlike any she'd ever felt. Suddenly a howl, long, deep, and powerful, filled the sky, causing her to tremble. It was a call, and somehow she knew deep in her gut it was for her. She closed her eyes and shook her head, attempting to calm her churning insides. Unfortunately, it wasn't helping.
"Oh, crap. Crap, crap, crap."
"Are you just going to sit there twitching like a scared rabbit?"
A sharp voice stabbed at her. Anna raised her head and met the eyes staring back at her from a stern but not unkind face. A pixie woman, about 15 inches tall, stood 5 feet away from her. Anna must have looked completely confused, but she couldn't stop her head from tilting ever so slightly as she took in the small woman.
"If you just keep staring at me stupidly with your mouth hanging open like that, as if you're just waiting on a bug to make a home in it, I'm not going to feel sorry for you when it catches you."
Anna's forehead scrunched up as she pursed her lips. She asked the question she wasn't sure she really wanted to know the answer to, no matter how curious she'd been or how filled with longing she'd been.
"When who catches me?"
The pixie woman huffed.
"Your mate!"
"I am not asking you to accompany me," Gustavo told Costin. He'd sought out the only male left in their group that was already mated. The only other wolf he'd talked to about his frustration had been his beta, but regardless of his place in the pack, he was still an unmated male.
"Barry will kill me, not to mention what my mate will do to me."
Costin paced back and forth in the clearing they'd ran to when Gustavo had requested an audience. Gustavo watched as the beta ran his fingers through his hair, obviously agitated over his request.
"You have to know I would not ask if I did not feel she needed me."
He almost felt guilty when he asked.
"What would you do if it were you in my position, and you were sure you knew where your mate was?"
Costin's eyes shot up and glared at him.
"That's a low blow, and you know it."
Gustavo shrugged.
"Perhaps, but it is a fair question, compañero.
Even if you don't want me to come with you, I'd still have to lead you to the correct forest," Costin pointed out.
Then he asked,
"Why aren't you taking your beta?"
Gustavo shrugged as he straightened the cuffs of his perfectly pressed dress shirt.
"He's unmated."
"I forgot what a pain you unmated males are," Costin muttered under his breath.
Gustavo watched as the young beta continued to consider his request. He realized there would be repercussions for his actions, but Gustavo didn't care. There was a gnawing emptiness mixed with need inside of him, and these emotions did not belong to him. He was feeling her emotions, those of his true mate. Whether or not she knew that she was broadcasting that loudly to him, he wasn't sure. But he knew that he had to heed her call. She needed him, even if she wasn't aware of it herself. And he needed her just as much, if not more. Costin suddenly stopped his pacing as his head snapped up. He was looking in the direction of Perry's home. His eyes narrowed dangerously.
"Guess?" Gustavo asked as he followed Costin's line of sight. "My mate says we have a visitor."
"Friend or foe?"
Costin started off at a jog as he answered.
"Depends on why he's here."
They both ran back in their human forms, not wanting to deal with having to undress and then redress. When they were standing just outside the front door, Kostin looked over at him.
How do you keep your clothes so clean and neat, even after running through a field?
Gustavo shot him a grin full of teeth.
It is one of my many talents, my friend.
The door in front of them opened, drawing their attention. Sally, Kostin's mate, stood with both hands on her hips, glaring at them.
Hey, brown eyes, Kostin grinned down at her.
Don't hey brown eyes me, she snapped.
Gustavo started to laugh, but quickly turned it into a cough when those brown, angry eyes landed on him.
Perry is going to kill you both if you attempt what you were discussing.
Kostin reached up and ran a finger across her cheek, which she promptly slapped away.
Sally mine,
Kostin started, but his little mate held up her hand, stopping his words in their tracks.
Don't. We can discuss your plan to tick off the most powerful High Fae alive after.
She motioned them to follow her inside. Gustavo had to give it to the little American female. She had a growl that was worthy of an alpha werewolf.
You sure you want one of those healers to be your mate?
Kostin whispered as they stepped into the living room.
You might want to listen to him, Gustavo. Gypsy healers are no one to trifle with.
A voice that Gustavo hadn't heard in centuries filled the room, and then the owner of the voice stepped in from the doorway to the kitchen.
And pardon me, healer,
the male said, giving Sally a slight bow.
But Perry is one of the most powerful High Fae, despite what she wants you to think. Alston.
Gustavo stepped forward and held out his hand. The leader of the Council of High Fae clasped the Spanish Alpha's forearm in greeting.
It has been a long time.
Alston nodded.
Too long, he admitted.
Did Perry send you?
Kostin asked. Alston shook his head.
Actually, she'd probably be ticked off if she knew I was here.
Well, pissing Perry off is something we enjoy doing, so by all means make yourself at home.
Kostin grinned. Sally smacked his chest.
Behave, you're already in enough trouble.
Alston's brow rose as he looked between the two.
Pardon, but if Perry did not send you, why are you here?
Gustavo asked, stepping forward as he crossed his arms in front of his chest.
I'm checking on her progress with Vulcan. She doesn't like council interference, of course. But then she also complains that we don't help the humans enough. Perry likes to be in control. That being said, Vulcan is a very large problem for us all. It is in everyone's best interest that he be taken care of, sooner rather than later.
Well, we've hit a little bump in the road,
Sally told him, her hands twisting together as she glanced at her mate. Gustavo could tell the healer really didn't want to tell Alston about Jewel being taken.
A bump?
Alston's eyes narrowed.
Okay, more like a large amount of construction.
He waited.
Jewel Stone has been captured by Vulcan,
Kostin said for his healer. A breath was sucked from the High Fae's lungs as his face paled.
He has a healer in his procession?
Dalton Black is her true mate. He, Perry, Lucien, and Dylan have gone after her,
Gustavo added quickly. Alston's eyes grew unfocused as he seemed to slip away from them for several minutes.
We have seen this before. If history is any indication, he will attempt to rebuild his army of witches. He almost destroyed us last time, and that was without today's technology. In this day and age, he could unleash his power on the world so much quicker.
He paused and then looked at Kostin.
Why has she not taken more of you? Vassal sent all of these wolves to help, and yet she has left all of them, save two, here.
She's been trying to keep the males separate from the newly discovered healers, Gustavo answered with a low growl filling his voice.
I take it that it wasn't a popular decision?
Alston's lips pursed. Gustavo smirked.
When is it ever okay with a wolf to be kept from his possible mate?
Where are the females?
Perry and El and Adam take them to the Pixie Realm.
Alston let out a string of words in another language.
What is she thinking, dragging the pixies into this?
She felt that all of the unmated pairs would be a distraction, doing more harm than good, Sally offered.
I understand her reasoning, but that doesn't make it right.
Before you came, I was discussing with Kostin the idea of making a visit to the King of the Pixies,
Gustavo told the High Fae. Alston looked thoughtfully at the Alpha.
Just you?
Gustavo nodded. I feel the pull of my mate and it is too strong to ignore. I respect Perry's position as a high fae, but no one will keep me from what's mine.
How do you plan to get there?
I was hoping Costin would be willing to show me the way.
Sally huffed and folded her arms in front of her, mimicking Gustavo's position. The Alpha didn't acknowledge her.
Perhaps it would be faster if I took you, the High Fae suggested.
This time, Sally's mouth dropped open as she nearly shouted,
What?
Costin held out his hand to keep his mate from moving any closer to the High Fae.
Do you really think that is the best course of action?
Costin asked.
I think that Perry has no right to keep the males from their mates, but I do agree that it wouldn't be wise to have all of them meet at once. Perhaps if we just allow one of them to go and explore the possibility, then a mated pair may indeed be the result. And this would be a great boon for our side. A mated alpha male is a much stronger wolf than an unmated alpha, and we need all the power we can get. Vulcan will not be defeated easily, especially if he controls a healer, and this healer will only be the beginning. His hunger for power is insatiable, and he will not stop until he has enslaved all of the healers. How better to protect the females than to have them paired with their mates?
Alston pointed out.
Perry is going to be pissed that you interfered, Sally argued.
Probably,
Alston agreed.
But then, I never really cared if Perry was unhappy with my actions. If I did, I would spend my entire life disappointed. We both know that Perry is only pleased when everyone else is doing exactly what she tells them to.
She's doing her best, Sally defended.
I've no doubt that she has been, but she can't do it all on her own. She needs help, and I've been hesitant to step in the past. We cannot afford to let Vulcan reestablish himself in the human realm. The human world would not recover, and Vulcan's depravity would eventually spread to all the realms.
So you and Gustavo are going to take a little field trip to meet the healers, Sally said. What then?
I'm sure Perry has given them specific orders of some kind. Maybe Gustavo can help. There is no harm in just checking in on them.
What of the other males? Costin asked.
Alston made a dismissing motion with his hand.
They don't need to know anything until we've gone.
Maybe we should go too,
Sally said, turning to Costin. He grinned at her.
You don't want to be here when Perry comes back, do you?
Do you?
She asked, her voice rising slightly. Costin thought about it briefly, then shook his head.
You're right, Sally mine. We totally do not want to be here when she shows up.
I don't really care who tags along, Gustavo spoke up. I'm just ready to be gone.
Then it is settled,
remarked the High Fae genially. Alston started to hold out his arms for them to grasp.
Wait, Sally said as she hurried to the stairs. We can't leave Kara here with these males.
Good point, Costin agreed.
She is one of the healers, Alston asked. Has she no mates in the group?
She's only 16. Sally snapped. She's not ready to have to put up with a possessive, bossy butthead just yet.
Hey, Costin threw his hands up. I'm standing right here.
You can't refute the facts, babe, Sally retorted as she headed up the stairs, taking them two at a time.
The three males stood in the living room waiting on the two gypsy healers to join them. Gustavo was growing more and more restless with the need to meet his mate. The need had been growing gradually, and now it was nipping at his heels like a relentless pup, determined to make him do what it wanted. Finally, the two girls appeared at the bottom of the steps.
Okay, let's go before the other wolves come in from their practicing.
Sally motioned them all over to Alston. She narrowed her eyes on Gustavo.
You better know what you're doing.
Gustavo thought it was funny that the little female was attempting to give him orders. He didn't take offense, but he didn't back down either.
I figured you would argue that we bossy, possessive males could never possibly know what we are doing.
Sally snorted.
Good point.
They each grabbed a place on Alston's arms, and a moment later they were swallowed by darkness. When they reappeared, they were surrounded by thick forest.
Ainsel, King of the Pixies, I request entry into your realm,
Alston called out in a booming voice. There were several heartbeats of silence before a short man suddenly appeared.
"Harry did not inform me that more of you would be coming," the King of the Pixies huffed.
Gustavo stepped closer to the Pixie and spoke before the High Fae could.
"My mate is in your lands, and I am requesting entrance to see her."
"And you are?"
"Gustavo Rivera, Alpha of the Spanish Pack of Canis Lupus. I was asked by Vassil to assist Perezada with the disposition of Volcan, the evil sorcerer. In the process of that assistance, I've discovered that my mate is one of the healers that has recently been discovered."
Ainsel began to pace in front of the group.
"Does she know you are coming?"
"Probably not," Gustavo admitted.
"Does she even want to meet you?"
Ainsel challenged.
"I've been charged with their protection."
The Pixie puffed himself up proudly. Gustavo let out a deep growl.
"I do not want to disrespect you, little king, but you and any army you could muster would not keep me from her."
The large wolf stared at the Pixie evenly for several moments.
"But you needn't worry. I will not harm her."
"But you sure as hell might scare her if you don't tone it down a notch or two."
Kara spoke up for the first time. Gustavo shot her a questioning look.
"Dude, she doesn't know you. She's been told about the whole mate thing, of course, but she's human, and being told something and coming face-to-face with it are two very different things. If you don't get your crap together, you will send her running in the opposite direction."
"Then I will give chase," Gustavo said with a toothy grin. "My wolf loves a good hunt."
"And you've just stepped past Possessive Land into Creepyville. Seriously, you need to get that mess under control."
Kara motioned with her hand from his feet all the way up to his head.
"Are you not only 16, Ninita?"
he asked, a frown marring his handsome face.
"I am centuries older than you. Forgive me if I think I know a little more about true mates than you."
"Yeah, well, I'm more human than you, not to mention a tad more female. So forgive me if I think I know a little more about the human female you are attempting to claim," Kara snapped.
"I'll ask again, do you really think you want one of these healers as your mate?"
Costin asked, his brow raising as he glanced between Gustavo and Kara.
"She's right," Sally told him. "You're going to have to get your natural instincts under control if you don't want to scare her."
Ainsel looked at the High Fae.
"Can you subdue him if he gets out of control?"
The High Fae nodded, then added,
"I don't believe he will be a problem. He simply wants to meet her."
Sally coughed.
"Meet her, claim her, bite her, and drag her to his den by her hair," she muttered.
Costin smacked her on her backside.
"Behave."
She stuck her tongue out at her mate, earning her another swat to her rear. The Pixie King let out a long sigh.
"I suppose I might as well let you all in. He's just going to stand out here until I do."
He motioned to Gustavo.
"And I don't like hulking alphas roaming the borders of my realm. It sets my people on edge."
"Good idea," Alston agreed.
Ainsel made a motion with his hand, and the air in front of them shimmered.
"Welcome to our most glorious realm."
He swept his arm forward, dramatically inviting them in. The group stepped forward, transitioning from one realm to another. Gustavo nearly fell to his knees as emotion swarmed him. Anxiety, confusion, fear, desperation, need, curiosity, and frustration all bombarded him in the same instant. He heard Kara gasp, and Sally muttered, "Here we go." He knew his eyes were glowing as his wolf pushed forward, and he felt his canines lengthen. She was so close. His wolf pushed closer to the surface, causing him to throw his head back and let out a loud howl, a call to their mate. If Gustavo could put the howl into words, it would have said, "I'm here. I'm a safe place. Come to me where you belong." Instead of feeling her move closer to him, she moved further and her emotions began to bounce all over the place. Gustavo closed his eyes and let his instincts take over. He allowed his wolf control for a moment, using his superior senses to guide him. He shed his human form, bursting into his wolf skin, clothes falling in shreds all around him.
"Holy crap!" Kara shouted. "He's huge!"
"I thought you said you could control him,"
Ainsel said, an edge in his voice.
"He's not going to hurt her,"
the beta Alston assured.
"But they might tear this realm apart to find her," Costin pointed out.
Gustavo pushed all of their voices away as he took off at a sprint, his paws chewing up ground as he ran. His only thought was for his female. She was close, and the beta was correct. He would remove every obstacle in his way to find his mate.
"So close," his wolf growled.
After several minutes, his paws came to a skidding halt as he came upon a group of humans and wolves, four of which he recognized. There were two other females that he did not.
"Not ours," his wolf confirmed.
"Gustavo,"
the male he knew as Soren said, and stood stepping in front of his female, a high fey warrior named El. Gustavo shifted, uncaring that he was naked.
"Where is she?"
he asked, unable to keep the gruffness from his voice.
"I totally get that you werewolves are comfortable with the whole phasing and lack of clothing thing, but us mere humans prefer the essentials to stay covered," the dark-skinned female bit out. "Wait, he's just standing there in his birthday suit?"
the girl he figured must be Heather asked, as a thick southern accent rolled off her tongue.
"Naked as the day he was born,"
the other female confirmed. The blind female smacked her leg.
"Ain't that the way of it? Blind chick misses out on all the fun."
"Stella, Heather," Soren snapped. "Now is not the time for your antics."
"Is that his way of saying we should put a cork in it?" the one they called Stella asked.
"I'm assuming, since you two aren't his mate, Anna must be, and she isn't here at the moment to calm him, if you get my drift."
Krina, the she-wolf Gustavo knew belonged to Vassal's pack, told them.
"Anna."
Her name rolled off his tongue like the sweetest prayer.
"At least I'm not deaf," Heather said with a shiver. "That Spanish accent gives me the tingles." "There will be no tingling,"
Elle growled.
"You two are going to get yourselves put on Anna's hit list once her instincts take over and she claims him."
"Yeah, well, I didn't exactly ask to get a look at him, so not exactly our fault. However, I am with Heather on the whole Spanish accent."
"That's nice," Stella pointed out.
"I'll totally risk her ire just to hear him talk.
Go on, handsome,"
she encouraged.
"Grace us with some more of that magical voice and accent."
Adam, the other elf warrior in the group, pinched the bridge of his nose.
"These healers are going to be the death of me."
Gustavo was growing impatient. He didn't give a damn if the females saw him without his clothes or liked his accent. All he cared about was Anna. His Anna. He looked back at Soren.
"Donde?"
he asked again.
"Perhaps Alpha, it would be better if you waited on her to return instead of chasing after her."
Soren tilted his head slightly to show he wasn't challenging him. It didn't mean that Gustavo didn't appreciate his suggestion. He growled at the younger, less dominant wolf.
"She is mine."
"No one is disputing that," El said calmly. "But right now, you are thinking with your instincts instead of with your good sense."
Gustavo growled so low that it rumbled in his chest as his gaze bore into the female. Soren pushed her behind him and met the alpha's gaze before briefly dropping his eyes.
"We aren't trying to keep her from you, but she is young, she's human, and she's new to our world. You don't want her to fear you, so don't give her a reason to. Anna, ours. They stand between us and what is ours."
His wolf was agitated and growing more so by the minute. Gustavo understood what they were saying, but he wasn't the one in control. His instincts were stronger than his logic in that moment.
"Hunt,"
his wolf told him.
"Yes,"
the man agreed. He phased. Fur covered his skin and his hands and feet changed to paws. His paws hit the ground and he lunged, bounding over the clearing in a single leap. He followed the only scent that seemed to travel in that direction, the smell of sweet spices and ocean air. He knew it was the unique smell of his mate. Gustavo felt the bond opening between them the closer he got. His excitement grew, knowing he would see her soon.
"I'm coming, querida."
Chapter 2. The Dark Ones are parasites. Without their hosts, they would wither and die. This means that they cannot live on their own, nor should they be allowed to. I only know of one thing to do with parasites. Purge the world of them. Dylan Jacobs. The prospect of meeting with a coven of vampires would have intimidated some wolves, and certainly all men. But Dalton would meet with every bloodsucker on this continent if that was what it took to get his jewel back. He would even fight to extinguish those covens if that is what was required, and likely it would be. Like any Canis Lupus, he would go into the very fires of hell to save his true mate. He kept trying to reach through the bond, but every attempt ended the same. Nothing. It was as though the cord that connected them had been cut right at the place it attached to Jewel. Being unable to communicate with her, to at least feel her and know whether she was safe, was beginning to become an unneeded distraction. Dalton couldn't afford to have his attention divided. He needed to be clear-headed and focused. Vulcan was a cunning foe, and there was no margin for error when it came to his mate's life. "How are you holding up?" Dylan's voice pulled him out of his own head. Dalton looked at his alpha and could see the concern in his eyes. He knew that Dylan was worried, not only about his beta's well-being, but also what would happen if the bond wasn't restored. If that happened, Dalton would deteriorate past the point of no return, and it would be Dylan's responsibility to deal with him. Dalton knew he could count on his alpha to do what was necessary if it came to that, even if it meant that Dylan would have to take the life of an old friend. He sincerely hoped that it did not come to that.
"I'm ready to get this confrontation over with," Dalton answered. His voice was low and reverberated in his chest with the frustration of his wolf.
They stood next to a manhole that was tucked away in the back alley of a group of congested apartments. They were built one on top of the other and stood so close together that a resident could lean out his window and touch the opposite building. He wondered if the people living there ever felt like rats, scampering in and out of their little rat holes. It was no wonder the vampires chose this particular place to inhabit. What better place for a group of snakes to make their nest than outside of a rat hole?
"Perry, what's the problem?"
Dylan asked, shifting his attention from his beta to the High Fae. He approached her and Dalton followed, though he'd been trying to give everyone some space from his seething wolf. Wherever Perry went, Lucian followed, of course, and even though Lucian was an ally, it didn't make it easy for three dominants to work together without the occasional snarl. Dalton, being on edge the way he was, would only make it that much harder for Lucian and Dylan to keep their cool. Perry let out a whistle as she planted her hands on her hips and turned to face the males.
"Boys, here's a history lesson. Once upon a long time ago, there were witches lurking about, lots of them. Naturally, these witches had to support themselves. Dark rituals don't pay for themselves, you know. So they often sold their services to those willing to pay their prices, which, I can assure you, were not cheap. But, lucky for us, immortality tends to make one extremely wealthy, and one group in particular could always afford to pay. Vampires. The bloodsuckers and the witches have always had a working relationship. Equally lucky for us is this. I can detect the witch's magic, and I can tell you that one such spell has been cast on this manhole cover. The entrance to their lair is right under your feet, gentlemen."
"Then let's go,"
Dalton growled, stooping to remove the manhole cover.
"Stop," Perry barked. "As much as I would love to see you fried where you stand, I can't stand the smell of burnt fur. Do you think the vamps would leave the entrance to their coven unguarded?"
Dalton froze, eyes wide, staring at the High Fae.
"Distractions," he thought to himself. "I'm so obsessed with getting Jewel back that I am taking unnecessary risks. I have to get it together."
"Do you have a plan?"
Dylan asked, putting a hand on Dalton's shoulder and pulling him back a pace. Perry scoffed.
"Of course I have a plan. Good grief, what kind of High Fae do you take me for?"
They waited. Finally, Lucian prompted.
"Love, would you mind sharing the plan?"
Perry turned and faced the manhole, crossing her arms over her chest.
"I will happily share it."
She paused.
"I'm going to break the spell."
Dalton clenched his jaw tightly, trying with every ounce of self-control he had to keep from growling at Perry. Despite his earlier misstep, he felt like they were wasting valuable time. He needed to be moving forward, if only to have the illusion of getting closer to wherever Vulcan was holding Jewel. He knew the others were doing everything they could to find Jewel, but it just didn't seem like enough. They cared about Jewel, and they wouldn't waste time needlessly. That was the only reason he didn't roar at the High Fae to hurry the hell up. Dalton and the other males watched as Perry's power built around her. She was muttering words in a language he didn't understand, strangely beautiful and haunting at the same time. Kneeling down, she placed her hands on the metal. The cadence of her words began to pick up speed, and the light around her grew almost blindingly bright. What seemed like hours later, the light faded and the chanting stopped. Perry stood and stepped away from the cover.
"Whatever witch cast that spell was quite powerful," Perry admitted.
She motioned for Lucian to step forward, and her mate moved in his smooth, fluid way, kneeling down and grasping the handle of the manhole. He lifted the solid metal lid with no effort and placed it aside. He glanced back at Dylan, and then Dalton, before hopping down into the dark hole. Suddenly, a high-pitched screeching came rushing up to their ears out of the opening. Perry tisked her tongue.
"Somebody knows that they have uninvited guests, and they aren't too happy about it," she said nonchalantly as she hopped into the darkness, following her mate.
Dylan turned to him.
"I know you want her back. I completely understand that your patience has long since evaporated, but you have to hold it together in there."
He pointed to the manhole.
"Vampires like to play games. It makes them feel clever and powerful. Don't challenge them yet. If we play along, it will speed things up."
Dalton gave a stiff nod as Dylan turned and jumped down the hole. He didn't hesitate as he followed his alpha. The darkness engulfed him completely, causing him to look up at the opening and wonder why no light from the street shone down through the hole.
"It's another spell," Perry spoke up, apparently anticipating that they would all be wondering the same thing. "They have to keep the light out at all times, but I suspect that they occasionally leave the cover off the hole on purpose, hoping to catch an onlooker who is too curious for his own good. The bloodsuckers play many such games."
Dalton felt a moment's sympathy for those who had unknowingly walked into the lair of these particular spiders. But it was gone just as quickly as it had appeared. His mind snapped back to the present. His mate had been snatched by a spider as well. Perhaps it was a different kind of spider, but a spider nonetheless, and one even more dangerous than these. For the victims of the vampires, it was too late. But he refused to believe it was too late for Jewel. He would get to her in time. There simply was no other option. Perry held out her hand and pushed out her magic, producing a small ball of white light. The darkness seemed to shrink away from the glowing orb, as though the light was causing it physical pain. She felt the filth of the vampires the minute Lucian had removed the manhole covering, but as soon as she had entered the tunnel, she felt saturated in it.
"Bleach," she muttered under her breath. "I'm going to need lots and lots of bleach."
Perry looked right and then left down each side of the tunnel and decided to follow her nose. She turned to the right and made a motion with her hand.
"Let's go, gentlemen."
She glanced back at Dylan, who looked about as happy as a cat being baptized. A slow smile slid across her face.
"If you want to stay back here and keep watch over the hole, I won't tell everyone what a pansy you were. Maybe just Jackie."
She paused and the smile grew wider.
"Who, I'm sure, will tell Jen?"
Dylan shook his head. He knew exactly what kind of trouble Jen, the mate of the Serbia Pack Alpha and all-around troublemaker, would get him into.
"If I was going to stay behind, which I'm not, and Jen was going to find out about it, you might as well put it on social media."
"My point exactly," she agreed.
Perry turned back around and continued forward. Mentioning Dylan's daughter Jackie and her friend Jen caused a small pang in the Fae's heart. They were best friends to Sally and both mated to alpha males. Jackie was mated to the prince of the Romanian wolves, Fain Lupe, and Jen was mated to Decibel, the alpha of the Serbia pack. She had grown close to them over the past months, as they too faced some very challenging foes. For the moment they seemed to have a reprieve, which was a good thing since she couldn't be there to save their heroic butts. Perry could only imagine how they would complain about not getting to be a part of rescuing Jewel, and Jen was going to whine about not getting to be around to tease the healers about finding their true mates. Yep, she missed those crazy hussies, but she would never let them know that. They would never let her live it down. Low growls from beside and behind her pushed Perry's thoughts of her friends aside. Lucian reached an arm out in front of her, stopping her progress. She tried very hard not to roll her eyes. She understood all too well that it was ingrained in his very fiber to protect her, regardless of the fact that she was one of the most powerful supernaturals alive. Oftentimes, she simply humored him, and he knew it. He had access to her thoughts, after all, but for some reason it didn't seem to bother him.
"Only a male not confident in himself would be threatened by a female such as you,"